Potlatch, a program about Alaska Natives for Alaska Natives. This week on Potlatch, Georgiana Lincoln tells about the history and goals of the Fairbanks Native Association, the dancers from Amonic entertain you, and Levi Lott and Jennifer Ortiz compare Eskimo and Latin American cultures. First, this message from Mo Wassily.
The deadline for Alaska Native villages to select their lands is getting closer, maybe even closer than you think. The deadline for completed and corrected applications for land selection is December the 18th, 1974. Notice we say completed and correct. Native land claims regulations require that the selected land be contiguous and compact. In some instances, the Bureau of Land Management may have to correct the village selections to make sure the selections meet regulations. The BLM cannot change applications after the December 18th deadline, so get your applications in immediately. In case the BLM is to change your village's application, there'll be still time.
Georgiana Lincoln has spent the last few years as executive director of the Fairbanks Native Association. Here she is telling about how the association started and what it is doing.
Approximately 13 years ago, In dealing with the land claims as such at that time, and the potlatches, and dealing with education and problems that didn't require necessarily money or an office, which they didn't have, and they didn't have any paid personnel. And then they got, I think it was, an OAO grant of $35,000 under a CAP program, Community Action Program. And under that, they had a skeleton staff, like a director and a secretary, and I think an aide. They expanded to have a half-time employment section, or an individual dealing with employment. And at that time, Ruby Tansy, who is now Ruby John, was on a task force, and there was some money available for model urban Indian centers across the country. So Ruby came back and reported to FNA and to AFN, and particularly a Native center that was in Anchorage, and she thought that the Native Center in Anchorage would apply for this money. Well, fortunately or unfortunately, they did not, and the Fairbanks Native Association did, and they were the only ones to apply in Alaska. And as it turned out, there were, I believe, 39 Native organizations, Indian organizations throughout the United States that had applied, and four were chosen: Los Angeles, Gallup, New Mexico, Minneapolis, and Fairbanks. So we started with $193,000 contract or grant to provide various components that we thought the emphasis needed to be with that budgetary restriction, and that was youth and family counselor or services, the employment section, administration, of course, what I call the very necessary evil. And we had a research and program planning component for getting additional funding. So The FNA, when you ask, you know, what are their goals, I think their goal is to provide the needs and the desires, and I'll further define that, as seen by the Native people in Fairbanks. And we've had to limit ourselves to Fairbanks. Right now we have 4,000 726 Alaska Natives residing permanently in Fairbanks as of July, the end of July. But everyone talks about, to Native people, what is your need? And right now, our need is today, not any planning. And if you ask them, what is your need? Maybe today I've got a cold and I need to see a doctor and we need better medical attention. But if I say, what is your desire for your life and your family's life? That means further down the road and some planning. So we have, I felt, dealt with that on that basis with our Native people in Fairbanks and expanded the services to meet those desires, but not as a duplicating mechanism for the community, but a complementary one. And I keep emphasizing that the Native Center is not in business to take some other agency out of business. We're simply there to assist our Native people in finding what other resources are available and forcing, if you will, the local and state agencies to accept their responsibilities for all citizens of Alaska. The Native people hopefully will put us out of business so that they will not have to come to the center to find out where these various resources are, that they'll be able to do it themselves.
Georgiana Lincoln of the Fairbanks Native Association. Next, we hear from the Ammonic Dancers. Father Jim Poole sent us a tape of these dancers.
The Ammonok Eskimo Dancers. The men and women of Ammonok entertain us with songs and dances, some old and some new. The Ammonok dancers this evening, there are 20 singers and 3 drums being used. The drums being used, beaten down upon them, the Yukon style, from the top of the drum. Each man who is dancing holds a hand mask of one kind or another containing 4 ptarmigan feathers. The women who are dancing in the background are holding graceful hand masks made of carved wooden holders with polar bear hair. The singers and the drummers ask the dancer to dance until they are satisfied. Either that or until all possible energy has been exerted. When they are satisfied, then they are allowed to retire. But especially if a dancer is well-known and they like his dancing, he may be asked to present many an encore. The first dance that will be presented this evening is the dance of the seal swimming. And this is being done by Alec Bird and Walter Joe, 2 men sitting on the floor, 4 women standing behind them, dressed in cuspucks, and the actions of the dance describe the motions of the seal swimming. The seal swimming dance.
Yeah. Yeah.
Eskimo Music. Thanks to KNOM, Father Jim Poole, and the Ammonic Dancers. Levi Lott lives in Tuluksak, and Jennifer Ortiz lives in Puerto Rico. I asked both of them recently to compare the Latin American culture with the Eskimo culture. They discussed how Latins get along with whites, whom they call gringos, and how Eskimos get along with whites, whom they call gusaks.
When we talk about our family in Eskimos, you know, we don't limit it to our little family like our mother and our father. Our families are broad, you know. Like in Tuluksak, practically everyone is my relative, and our people are so closely knitted together, you know. Our people are close together. You know, but in Kazakh society, they seem to be separated, you know. They seem to be afraid of their neighbors, you know.
I agree with you on about everything. Family is not limited to father, mother, and brothers. It's everything, all our aunts, our uncles, our grandmothers, our great-grandmothers, whatever. And we extend that even to our neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
And since we're such a small island, well, sometimes we even take it further, and it's the whole island, it's the whole family. But I can't remember the time when there was this this massacre at Tel Aviv, Lod Airport. Well, I remember it became such a solemn thing of what happened. Nobody knew those people, really. They were relatives in their way. But we felt it, and we cried for it and everything, just like if it were one of our own.
Mm-hmm.
We get to be very united. I agree with you that white society also is, they're separated, they're
mm-hmm.
cold. There's just something is missing in there.
When I get out of a village, people are working from 8 to 5, you know, and they got this 8 to 5 blah. But back home, time doesn't matter to them, to my people, you know. Like, they'd go out and hunt. Our people are hunters and fishermen, and but they're starting to work like Kazakhs now, you know, 8 to 5. Very few of them are working, but majority of them are hunting, you know, and fishing, and they just go out to hunt whenever they feel like it, you know.
I think there's also a similarity there with our culture and yours. Because we also had that thing that time wasn't important. It was just the moment, that certain occasion that was really important. But we're starting to live that thing also about from 8 in the morning to 5. That's
mm-hmm.
That's just, you know, it has to be that way. And people have had to go and work in the city, in the factories, and have to stick to that schedule and that kind of thing. And there's so much white influence in our country that we even have to adopt their ways of entertainment. You know, work from 8 to 5, and from 9 on at night, it's nightlife, it's nightclub and all that stuff, which is not really ours. It's something foreign. It's not ourselves. But we have to take it, because we have nothing else.
And toward the attitude of my people toward Cossacks, you know, my people say Cossacks talk too much, you know. They just talk too much, you know. Like when they get together, they keep blabbering instead of making sense. But in my society, you know, I don't know if it's true anymore, but our people speak when they have to speak, you know, when, you know, like if they say something, they mean what they say instead of just talking nonsense, like, you know. I don't really know how to express it, but that's the best way I can express it.
I would express it the same way. Because, like you said, we only talk when we mean it, and when there's something really important. And whenever we have a conversation with someone, there's this this commitment with a person. Like right now, I'm talking to you, and I know it's, you know, it's being taped and whatever, but I'm listening to you. You know, I'm taking Levi's message. It's not just a person sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
But I try to find that, you know, with the gringos, with the American people, and it's really hard to find. You know, their interests are so different. It's money and it's security and it's the job or whatever, but there's just no warmth, no tenderness in that communication. There's no rapport. I don't know what the word would be.
While you're at that, you know, the Eskimos back home, I always call them my people. Whenever their neighbor needs something, you know, like they run out of food, the neighbors will help them instead of that attitude, I don't want to get involved.
Yes, that's right.
And they help each other back home. That's what's so unique about my people, you know.
Yes, we have that kind of feeling also towards our neighbor. And in helping our neighbor, we're not thinking about, will he take it like charity? Will he be offended? Is he too proud, you know? It's just giving, and whoever it takes will just takes it like that, you know, without what's he trying to prove or whatever.
And with the expression, the Cossack, you know, these people from lower 49s, you know, when they come up, some of them give me that expression, here's another dirty old Eskimo, you know. Yeah, with their facial expression, that's how I feel. I don't know how the other people feel, but it gives me that impression. And I'm trying to be truthful in what I say, you know, and how I feel.
I have that sort of feeling also. And I know there is discrimination against us, like in my own island. I know that Americans see us just like a resort, a vacationing island. I don't know what else. Like, I was reading today Newsweek, and I was so mad when I saw this ad that it just pictures us like an island that's a floating casino or something like that, with shows and nightclubs and drinks and whatever, and that's just what we are. And when Americans go to Puerto Rico, I know they have the wrong impression of what we are. And there is discrimination against us when they see us, that we don't want them there sometimes. Because we also have this stereotype of the American, the gringo, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The American that goes to Puerto Rico is not the one that you would see in New York or whatever else. It's just a person, though, in his 50s, 60s, with shorts and this printed blouses and shirts and this little hat and sunglasses and an Instamatic camera. Very ridiculous, that's the word.
What about in your home, when do you think of Eskimos, what does your people think of us? You know, when you hear about Eskimos, people that live in igloos or...
Yes, that's the idea we have. People living in igloos, hunting whales, very free, with a very simple way of life. And I was really surprised when I came here to find that none of that is true. That you are people that are trying to live in a society where there's another culture that has already overtaken your land. And you are not free. You don't have that simple way of life. You have to cope with all this new environment, all this work and all the responsibilities that the new environment has brought to you.
Like these older people, they won't understand about these people they call Latin Americans or South Americans or Puerto Ricans, but they only understand these people, these Cossacks that come to our villages, you know. And whenever there's little money involved, you know, they get real interest in us, you know. Oh, we want to help you do this certain thing right way, where you can save money, you know, when these people that tell you, you'll save money, but they just make money off of you.
I think the word would be paternalistic. You know, it's a sort of way of, we have that in my country too. And it's sort of way of telling you you're not capable of doing things yourself. Here we are with our money, with our intelligence, and with our capabilities, and we're going to do it for you the best way it's supposed to be done.
And they're making more money than what they're doing.
Yes, that's right. Yes, they benefit from what they're doing supposedly for us, but there's also a benefit for themselves in terms of money and I think some kind of personal satisfaction that I'll never understand.
Two cultures, Latin American and Eskimo, discussed by Jennifer Ortiz, a Puerto Rican, and Levi Lott, an Eskimo. I'm Jeff Kennedy, a Cossack and a gringo. Potlatch, produced in the studios of KUAC in College in cooperation with KTOO Juneau, KOTZ Kotzebue, and KYUK Bethel, under Title I of the Higher Education Act.